talking about the principle of first. First fruits, our priorities, it's that kind of feel. And I think it's important to link it through, because we've got three sessions which, if you like, follow one on to the other. Last week, Janet spoke about it's all about the heart, as Molly said. And she touched on things like being thankful and being generous and asking the question about where our treasure is. Because we know in Matthew, it says, in Matthew 6:21, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So we haven't stopped thinking about that, we're just extending the thoughts. So keep that in mind as we look about the principles of first that we're going to touch on today. And we'll continue this next week, also when we talk about specifically about tithing and more sort of money focused things. So I wanted to look at on the next page. Have we got the next page? Seems to have disappeared. Okay, we'll carry on. Okay, so we're going through that. Yeah, great. Next page. Okay, so our main illustration this morning, my main illustration, is two farmers who you know the story of well, Cain and Abel. And we're going to look at the way Genesis, or the story of Genesis, tells us about them and about their lives. But I thought it might be useful just to put a little bit of context, just on a few points that we can all engage with to understand, because not many of us spend our lives on farms. I mean, David, very fortunately, where's David sitting? Has he gone out? Oh, he's over there. He's given me we had a little chat about farming yesterday, just to make sure that I hadn't got it totally wrong. The internet's a wonderful thing, but it's better to speak to a man who actually does the job, isn't it? So, Cain and Abel. Let's pick up some questions. First question. An opportunity for you to join in. Okay, so we've got an arable farmer, so growing crops, and somebody pastoral, so he's got sheep. So let's start with sheep. How long for a spring lamb to be ready for market? Anybody want to for a spring lamb to be ready for market from birth to going to market? Not bad. David gave me 3 to 5 months as a guide. So your earliest, so you know, you're not that far out. The earliest ones will go 3 months, so it's a fair investment. And even before that, you've got all the livestock concerns. It's a big investment of time, is what I'm trying to get to. It isn't just a one-off, a single process. So there's a lot of investment of time, and when you're a farmer, you've got all your livestock handling and making sure you breed the right ram with the right ewe and all that stuff, which isn't part of our everyday lives. So I wanted to bring that out. And the next one. Okay, so how long for a spring wheat crop to grow? Anybody want to give me a guess? Not bad, no? Yeah, that's winter wheat, though. I'm talking about spring wheat. That's why I said spring wheat, yeah. So winter wheat is sown in the autumn before the frost happens. The spring wheat is sold after the frost. That's the break point, okay? So we're about right. 4 months was I think, over there. 5 months is the figure that I got. Okay, so not bad. So again, you know, you've prepared your land, you've sown your seed, and then you've got to wait 5 months. Again, a big investment. And then something a bit more out of our experience. How long for a new olive tree to bear fruit? Okay, Gary's saying 7 years, right? Any other bids on 7 years? 10, okay. Okay, well, the Eden Project site, talking about their olive trees, say 3 to 5 years is the minimum. I don't suppose you're going to get many olives at that point. So the first olives will grow 3 to 5 years on. So that just gives you an idea. So as a farmer, you're dealing with different timescales to what we deal with. and your investment before you get your harvest. It may be months, it may be years. And you may spend years and years developing, you know, breeding your sheep and so forth. So as we read the story of Cain and Abel, I just want you to have that in mind, because these are people who spent a lot of time carefully preparing for the point where they come to harvest and they get the benefit of the produce. Okay. So, Corinne, would you mind reading the passage, please?
Do you want me to read it from here?
She's got one. Yes, she's got the microphone. Yes, please.
The little red light tells me it's one, doesn't it? Yes. This isn't easy listening at all. It's Genesis 4. Adam had sexual relations with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant. When she gave birth to Cain, she said, "With the Lord's help, I have produced a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother and named him Abel. When they grew up, Abel became a shepherd while Cain cultivated the ground. When it was time for the harvest, Cain represented some of his crops as a gift to the Lord. Abel also brought a gift, the best portions of the firstborn lambs from his flock. The Lord accepted Abel and his gift, but he did not accept Cain and his gift. This made Cain very angry, and he looked dejected. "Why are you so angry?" the Lord asked Cain. "Why do you look so dejected? You will be accepted if you do what is right. But if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you. But you must subdue it and be its master." One day, Cain suggested to his brother, "Let's go out into the fields." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Afterward, the Lord asked Cain, "Where's your brother? Where's Abel?" "I don't know," Cain responded. "Am I my brother's guardian?" But the Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are cursed and banished from the ground which has swallowed your brother's blood. No longer will the ground yield good crops for you, no matter how hard you work. From now on, you will be a homeless wanderer on the earth."
Thank you, Corinne. So that gives you the whole story, and I want to sort of pick up the points that I think are so relevant to us now. So we've got the position Cain, who's the firstborn, he's the arable farmer, he's growing his crops, and Abel is a shepherd. There is interestingly, a theory in some of the texts that suggests that actually they were twins, because there's no mention of Eve conceiving again. It just says she conceived and gave birth. I'll let the theologians sort that one out. But it's interesting that, you know, that might be the case. And so their relationship could have been very strong. Because you know how strong twins bond together, usually. But nonetheless, I can imagine that there'll be some sibling rivalry between them in as they grow up and as they develop their farming practice. But the story talks us about the time when it came to offering. So we've got to the point where they've spent a lot of time doing the farming. They've planted the crops and harvested them. There's the sheep have given birth, or the ewes have given birth, and you've got the lambs. And what do they do? So Abel, it says, brought the best of his firstborn lambs, so the best of his very best. And the reason I think that's one of the things that's important as a farmer is, as talking to David about it, he said that those are the sheep you would keep to one side as your breeding stock. So it isn't just he was giving up the firstborn and the earliest lambs to come, but he was doing so at his own expense. So it was the best of those particular sheep, and it was also potentially, if you like, his part of his investment in the flock. So he was having to believe God to say, right, God's going to give me something to replace this. And I just thought, as that sort of echo with me, that's a very different tale to what we find when we look at what Cain did. Because just bringing some of your crops has a different connotation, doesn't it? It seemed to perhaps not matter to Cain what he did, what he brought. He knew he got to bring an offering, but he took something that was just some of it. And as we look at that, we can say to ourselves, well, you know, what is it we're doing? You know, are we in that position where we're able to say, yeah, we're bringing the best of what we do to God? But the story carries on. But God actually spoke to Cain and said, well, you know, your offering's not been accepted because you've done the thing you know you're not to do. You know the way to do it. And when the offerings are brought, as the story says, Abel's offering was accepted, but Cain's wasn't. And as God spoke to him, he was, and it'd be interesting to know how that context happened, or how did God speak to him, but the story doesn't tell us at that point. And so from the point of view of Cain, he knows exactly what he's got to do. God's underlined it. There was no argument between the two. He didn't say, well, I didn't know that. And as God spoke to him, the story's left at that point. But what else does God say there? He says in verse 7, you will be accepted if you do what is right, but if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you, but you must subdue it and be its master. So there's a clear alternative there, that bringing the offering, the right offering, opened the door to the enemy and opened the door to sin controlling his life. And that's what happened. He didn't act on what God said, and in the end, he killed his brother. And you know, that to me, obviously, it's a very simple story, and yet it tells us that putting God in the wrong place in our lives can have disastrous effects. And hopefully for most people, nothing like that bad. So let's run through what have we got here, okay? We've got a fair way down. So sin being at the door was, for Cain, he didn't take that warning, and he didn't heed it, and as a result, he got himself into a place where he was banished, and he was subject to the worst thing for a farmer. He was going to be in a position where the crops wouldn't yield for him, the ground would be hardened. So if you think back to Adam and Eve being cast out of Eden, they were told that they would have to put effort into getting crops. Well, he was being told, actually, you're going to have the ultimate frustration of not getting crops. The ground will be hard for you. So God's blessing was being withdrawn to a certain extent. Okay. So let's have a look at Abel's way. So the perspective of the New Testament on this is quite interesting, because it talks about Abel's way being a way of faith. So at the same point as we've got this attitude of heart, of being generous, of being thankful, it also is a matter of faith. So Hebrews 11:4, by faith Abel brought a better offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith Abel still speaks even though he is dead. So as he was investing time into his flock and raising the ewes and the lambs were born, he was thinking, I'm going to give God the first place and give him the best things. And he was commended for that. And it's a position of faith. And that affects all of our lives. But from the position of the story, it's just a wonderful example of faith in a very practical way. And why faith? Well, as Hebrews 11:6 goes on to tell us, without faith it's impossible to please him, to please God. So there we are. That's Cain and Abel showing us some very clear and stark alternatives. And you know, for our own lives, we can take that forward and look at some other areas that I think are worth exploring. So let's go to honouring. Next page. So going back to the beginning of the year, who remembers what we did at the first meeting of the year? Anybody tell me? Remember? The red carpet, absolutely. And we were talking about honour, and John helpfully rolled out the red carpet for us. And putting God first is a part of honouring him. And Proverbs tells us in Proverbs 3, 9 and 10, honour the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. So that wasn't just saying about our income, that's not, you know, the produce, that was talking about our wealth. So it's honouring God with everything we've got. And let's have a look at the next one, Exodus 34. The best of the first fruits and of your ground you shall bring to the house of the Lord your God. And that's part of the commandments to the Israelites. But again, it's talking about the best of the first fruits. It isn't giving, it isn't keeping back anything from God. He's blessed them by giving them a harvest, and he's part of their honouring of God. Is that he will then receive from them the best of the first fruits. And they're coming in that sense to the priests, and that was part of in that context, the support of the priests, because they didn't work. They did, in a sense of working the ground. But it was the responsibility of the individual to make sure that they brought the best of their first fruits to God. So why is this so important? Got another. So this is. So we go to the next one, John 3. The offerings that we see in the Old Testament are a shadow of what's to come, and Jesus is the ultimate offering. And I've put a little paraphrase in here. To just illustrate that. For this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only firstborn son, because Jesus was his only firstborn son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. So as we look all through the Old Testament and see all these, all the ceremonies and rituals and the Levitical instructions about what to do, we're then brought to the New Testament, where Jesus, who is the fulfillment of all those, is the ultimate sacrifice, the ultimate offering. And I think God regards the importance of that. You can see why it's so important, because he was pointing forward to the point when he would give his son. And ultimately, as we sang this morning, that Jesus' sacrifice is our way into relationship with God. The next one. So Jesus wasn't just any old sacrifice. He was a perfect sacrifice. So he was the firstborn and the best. He was a perfect sacrifice by a perfect person to bring, to perfect some very imperfect people. That's the Message translation. And the next one. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. So as we're looking at Jesus, he is the one we look to for our forgiveness. But it's only because God gave up his right for his son to stay in heaven. He didn't stand on that right, but Jesus came to earth to die for us and be the perfect sacrifice. So it's really important. That's why I think the Old Testament pictures are so important, that we understand that God views that really, really, really seriously, as it were. It's something that he's given the Israelites to do, because it tells a story of what's to come, as well as being the way that they got forgiveness of sins each year. So, looking at how we respond to that, there are five areas where I think we can bring that, as it were, to land in our own lives. The first one is finances, because offerings, in the most part that we do, are they're financial. We have to decide how much to give, our tithe or special offerings like we did for Betel. And it's wonderful to be able to invest in other things. But we honour God by how we use our money. In our interests, we're putting God first in hobbies, career and recreation. And by doing that, we honour God, and we can expect his blessing, because that's his heart. You know, as we follow him, as we obey him, then we see his blessing. Relationships. Putting God first in our families, in our marriages, and our relationship, friendships with other people. It gives us an opportunity to express God's love. And if we put God first in that environment, then we can see a really good outcomes, because God wants to bless. In our schedules, this is an American acronym, so we're making God the first priority of the day, and finding time, giving time to God at the right point in the day. It isn't possible for everybody to give time to God at the beginning of the day. And then in times of trouble, turning to God with problems. Let prayer be the first choice that we do. And as we, that's a sort of a helpful way of looking at the principle of first in terms of the areas in our lives that it could touch. And it's not limited to that, obviously. There are other things. So as we, as we've thought about those, we wanted to talk about some examples of people's lives, how people's lives have seen God outworking the principle of first. And Rachel's going to give us a little steer on that, on what she's seen in her life.
Okay, so Simon asked me if I had any stories of where I've put God first. And I had a thought, and I thought about how when I met the Hudsons for the first time a few years ago, I was just chatting with them about their life out there. And I was thinking about how I could support them and serve them by going over to teach the kids, and that would free Lucy up so she could spend more time doing the youth work as well. But at the time, whilst I was thinking about it, like, I'd just been given a permanent contract in my job, and It would mean like giving my job up, and kind of in the world's eyes, it didn't really make sense, having just done 2 years of teaching, to kind of go somewhere else where you're not going to be paid and stuff like that. But I really felt that that was the right thing to do, that was where God wanted me to be. As I always do with big decisions, I made a big list of reasons why I should go and reasons why I maybe shouldn't go. And I think just through praying through that and really seeking God's heart and putting God first, I ended up making the decision to go to Albania. And I'm really glad that I did, because it was an amazing time. And I've got another story where I ended up being an illegal immigrant, but if you want to talk to me about that one later, more than welcome to.
Thank you, Rachel. So one of the things when Rachel and I were chatting about that was that was a sacrifice, because it's put her a year behind, as it were, where she would have been in the British education system in terms of her career development. But God, God will honour that, and there's no doubt that because God is no man's debtor. And certainly Janet and I can testify to that. Quite some years ago, but I think it's worth just telling the story, when our kids were little, and the church particularly at that point was really engaging with wanting us to engage with giving, and tithing became quite a significant point of teaching, and we upped our giving at that point. But at the same time, we felt God was saying that I should leave what was then the Nationwide Building Society Training Manager Scheme and just be a clerk in a branch, which meant giving up the enhanced salary and all that. And at the same time, I'd been working with Nationwide long enough to join the pension scheme, so I started giving pension contributions. So this was a perfect storm of reduced income. Janet was home looking after two children. There weren't many options for us, and we can only say that God dealt with all of that. We spent time really searching our hearts and praying and spending time with people like John and Cecily, Graham and Molly, and talking and praying and thinking those things through before obviously making a big decision like that. And once I'd made the decision, and we felt God was saying, no, I couldn't carry on in that scheme, because it meant I had to be what they called nationally mobile, i.e. they could appoint me to anywhere in the country, including Northern Ireland. So the priority of God that time for us was to be in Ashwood locally. And I can only say that there's no point from there onwards where we could say there was a deficiency. And in fact, from the point of view of my career, although I had to be interviewed by the branch manager, the regional manager, and the management development manager to explain why I was doing this, and they were saying, well, you really, you're curtailing your career, you won't get the promotions, and not only won't you get the promotions, you're likely to be passed over because you've stepped back from the scheme. So ultimately we had to say, well, so be it, because that's what God wants us to do. Not an easy story to explain to somebody, to those sorts of people who don't have any concept of God leading their lives. But God did come through on that. He honoured what we did, because although I carried on being a clerk in the branch, 18 months later, I'd been promoted to assistant manager. The branch had been upgraded to the higher level to where I would have been if I had taken a promotion at the point when I said no. And, God's timing was just amazing. And whilst, you don't want to gloat, you're just thankful to God. And it's not that you do these things with expectation that God's going to do that, because that's ultimately God's side of the story. It's for him to decide how he helps us along the way. But while we walk with him and invest time with him, I think that that illustration hopefully gives people encouragement to see what God can do in your life. I think Janet might want to give her side of that story, because we see it quite differently.
Yeah, as I look back, that month, and it was in 1 month, we the pension contribution started, tithing started, and Simon's pay was reduced. It was 1 month to the next. So we didn't have a bit of a staggered get used to this amount. And I think it was something like a fifth of our salary, of Simon's salary, went 1 month to the next. And we hadn't been living in luxury because Pete was quite small and I'd given up work, so we were counting every penny up to that point. So as we were making that decision, we were going, oh, how are we going to do this? There was quite a lot of moments as we were pondering it. And actually, that first year, there was many moments as we were going, there isn't enough money to do what we need to do. But we can honestly say that God met us in every way that year. And we've got lots of stories we could tell about the way God provided during that year. But the thing I wanted to say was, as I look back and see what we've done since and how God's led us since, that decision has been a decision not for just that moment, but actually for every moment since, I think. Because we made a decision then to trust God, to put him first, and we saw how much he held us, looked after us. We didn't have lots that year. We lived very frugally, but God was there with us, and he provided even a holiday we had that year, which is one of the stories. But each time we've come to a point where God said, will you do this? I want you to do that. Whether it's money, time, relationships, anything, it's been much easier because we've gone, no, God is first in our life. And we know that when we put God first, he's looked after us. We don't know how that's going to work out. And each time we've done it, it's worked out differently because it's not the same each time. But that decision, and a few weeks ago when Gary and Matt were talking about creating an environment for growth, one of them was about troubles, and he said about in troubles you run, and either you run from God or you run further away or you run into God. And he said, make that decision. The decision's easier if you make it before you get to trouble. And for me, as I look back at that moment of making that decision set the pattern for the rest of our lives. So we've made placing God first our priority. So although there might be moments of go, can we do this? Is God really saying this to us? We've had many times of going, is God really saying that to us? Once we've decided that is what God's saying, there's no other choice but to put that first. And I just encourage you, whatever the decision is about giving, if you're putting God first, I know you can trust him. I know it will work out. It might not work out how you think it is. It might not work out the way we'd like it to. But putting God first is always, always the best.
We can recommend it. The other thing I'd recommend is that when you're making big decisions like that, is that you get alongside the people who are covering you, who you're accountable to, and talk them through. Any big step like that, you know, it's best not to make it on your own, because then you've got covering. If you've not heard God right, you've got the opportunity for God to speak. There's lots and lots of benefits. So, you know, when we're talking about putting God first, if we're talking about, you know, whether it's finance or whether it's our relationships with other people, whatever it is, we can trust God, but we've got the body around us to support us in getting there, and that's the great benefit. And as we submit our thoughts, what we think God's saying to other people, and say, "Are you hearing God in the same way?" Then that is, you know, such an encouragement when they can go away and just pray and give support, practical support, apart from anything else. But it's knowing that people are standing with you as you go through major challenges that is a very significant thing. And I think to a certain extent that is another part of putting God first, because, you know, God's put us in the body. He doesn't want us to try and do it on our own. He wants us to have that relationship, know, it is a fellowship of all believers, and we are looking to fellowship with one another and to be encouraging one another, walking with one another, bearing one another's burdens. All these things that we find in Scripture are you know, we just recommend them as part of putting God first, because it actually means we're not being independent. And that's, you know, if we're putting our thoughts first, that we may not hear God aright. If we're thinking that, you know, we've heard it and actually God hasn't said that, God's got a chance to correct our path. So just coming back to that acrostic again. The principle of first, I'm going to bring it up again, guys. There are various areas of our lives that we've suggested there, and certainly that's from Rick Warren's website. There isn't any area where God's hand doesn't or shouldn't touch our lives. So whatever we're doing, whether it is handling our finances, our hobbies, our relationships with other people, the way we use our time, and as Janet said, what we do in times of trouble. Where do we go? Where do we run to? Who is our rock? Who's our strong tower? God is trustworthy, and he will lead us into, you know, I can only think of the psalm, you know, he will lead us to green pastures. You know, there is a better way with God, and it's not necessarily an easy way, but we can testify to what God has done, and would encourage you to look at those areas. And part of that, I wanted to bring like a different way of responding today. If there's anything that anybody feels that God has spoken to them about, and it might be a challenge that you're feeling God saying, it might be affirming your desire to put God first, it might be calling out to God because you've got some troubles, or some people you know, there's times of troubles, or you're just being stirred by the Holy Spirit, I wanted to give you an opportunity to do a little taste and see that the Lord is good. So here we have some freshly baked bread and some dipping oils. They're all labelled up. And if you want to move, rather than, as it were, people sit and reflect on their response to God, I thought perhaps we would do something different. So there's an opportunity for you to, or even if you just want to have some bread and oil, that's a good enough reason. There's lots of images in the Bible about, you know, taste and see the Lord is good. If you want to mark, if this is marking something special for you, great. If you just fancy some bread and oil, great. But I just invite you to come and taste, because we're just encouraging everybody really to keep going for God. And in this season of growing, it's just marking another point where we're saying to God, you know, we want to go your way. And that's the whole message really that we want to bring this morning, the principle of first. It's not just saying, I want to go your way, God, but it's your way first, every time. And that is a challenge to me and to Janet, and it's a challenge to everybody. But we can testify to God's goodness as we've done that. So please, come and have a little taste.